come to my attention that the quarterback's been out in the media over the last week. And just to get out in front of that a little bit, I just wanted to say I wasn't here last year, and so I can't speak too much in terms of what it was like before he got here and when he got here last year. But from my 4 months on the job, he's been outstanding to work with. And we just are focusing on getting a little better every day.
Steve Rosenbloom. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, people, we don't know why either. But Steve Rosenbloom, Mike Esposito, we're here for Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Our phone number and way to the text line, 312-644-6767. We're going to go to the Score hotline. Guests joining us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Visit Aturo.com for new tires for spring. We welcome to the show Herb Howard of the Bigs. Coming in, Herb. You heard Ben Johnson, Riley, saying he knew his quarterback has been in the news. Herb, we leave it to you. Have you found Caleb? Has he commented on why he followed Daddy's lead? He didn't want to go to the Bears, what Daddy did, and all that kind of stuff. Have you found Caleb?
No, we haven't had a chance to hear from Caleb speak on that since the report came out. I think it would have been wise for that for them to have him speak last Wednesday, you know, during the OTA, and they didn't. I don't think he's going to this week either. I think he's going to do it next week, which I don't understand because this keeps the news story going. I think they could have addressed it, had a 10-minute press conference on it. He would have got pelted with questions. He would have answered them. He does pretty well with that. And then would have moved on. We would have been out of the news cycle. But because they choose to, or he chooses to, not speak and address it as though it's going to go away, it continues to linger.
Yeah, Herb, and thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. I thought the coach handled it as well as he could, but you're right. Until Caleb talks directly, it's going to be a story. And rather than put it to bed, it continues to hang out there. And I always thought, you know, going back to even USC, is that Caleb was savvy enough, or certainly he has people, including his family, you would assume, and his representation, right, and everybody that would say, hey, you know, go out there, make your 5 minutes of comments, and then this will pass.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I mean, he does pretty well at his press conferences in terms of, you know, dealing with the questions that are going to come, the tough questions or whatever. I mean, they went through a 10-game losing streak last year, and he had to come up to the podium after each one of those losses, and he handled himself pretty well. You never really saw him overly frustrated, never heard him throw people under the bus. He faced every question, answered it, and then looked to move on. I think he could have done the same thing with this particular situation. I don't really think it's a big deal at this point. It's something that has to be addressed. There are some things within it that matter. You know, why lie about it if you know you were going on record with a reporter and it was eventually going to come out in the first place? Those types of things. But since he's been here, he seems very, very committed to being a Chicago Bear and putting in the work to be the best player that he can be. And I think the Bears feel pretty good about the situation. I think most Bears fans feel good about the situation that Caleb and the Bears offense is currently in. So, you know, just address it, knock it out, move on. I don't know why they're choosing to kind of delay him speaking to the media.
Well, and Herb, the other thing that I thought as this came out is I didn't think this was as big a deal as some of the other random things that come out about players. And because I think we all thought the same thing. Like, we know the quarterback history here. It's of course, right, natural for him to be skeptical, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If I'm the top quarterback prospect, I'm not sure I want to go and become a Chicago Bear because of what you just said. We know the history here. We've never seen them get this right in the modern football era. And so, you know, I would have a lot of trepidation about coming to the Chicago Bears, and I would try and see if I can get myself in a different place. That's not to say, you know, this isn't going to work out here. We just haven't seen it before. And so a little reservation is to be expected or certainly to be understood. And so, you know, it's not like they handled it great in his first year. So it's not like he or his father, his camp, it's not like they were wrong. I mean, he's talking about watching tape by himself and all these different things that came out in the report. But listen, I think everybody understands the feeling about quarterbacks in Chicago. And you heard Coach address the, you know, this is where quarterbacks go to die. And I thought he did a pretty good job of addressing it. But, I mean, who can be mad at him? So I don't even understand, like, why he talked about not ducking the smoke. I don't want you – this doesn't seem like something to duck per se. Just address it one time it'll be on the record, and then you can get back to football.
Our guest is Herb Howard from the Bigs. He covers the Bears, and he's bringing all of his knowledge and acumen to us. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito on the score for Molly and Haw. The reason this is a big deal, and it's curious because of the reasons you mentioned earlier, that Caleb handles a lot of things flawlessly under great duress. Like, that offensive line was as bad as the head coaching and all of the stuff that he endured. Otherwise, he would have had some legendary fourth quarter comebacks. He would have been they would have put a statue up about him. He handles things so well. So the fact that he's not talking about this makes you wonder, who's sitting on them? The Bears, they're a public relations nightmare on a regular basis. They faceplant. His dad is the Little League dad. The reason why I think it's important to address this, was how is this playing in the locker room? How do the veterans look at him? Is he a guy being marionetted, puppeteered by his father? Is he a guy who's not, he doesn't know how to watch tape? If this guy can't watch tape, how are we supposed to follow him? All of those questions are possible. I'm not saying they are, but your knowledge of the Bears and the players there, how do you think this plays in the locker room?
Well, from what I've seen since Caleb has been a Chicago Bears, a guy who works at it, he wants to be great, and he's willing to put the work in. In the locker room, he seems like just one of the guys. They all seem to, you know, treat him like they treat everybody else. And I think that more than anything else that'll come out in the report is what the players get to see on a daily basis. Do they see him working out in the locker room? Do they see him, you know, studying in the classroom? How's he working out on the practice field? Those things will, you know, influence how the players feel about him more than what comes out in the article or even when the book is released later. So I think for the most part, the players believe that he buys in and works at it and they support him, but it's just something that you should get out in front of so it doesn't linger, so it doesn't fester, because the longer it goes, you're going to get into situations where the players are going to have to continue to answer these questions. All four of the players that spoke at the podium last Wednesday were asked about this. Two of those players weren't even on that team. And so, you know, it's something they're going to get tired of addressing and tired of dealing with. Coach Johnson tried to get out in front of, hey, I wasn't even here. And then you get two more players that also were not there. Yeah. Now they're starting to deal with it. It could become a bit of a nuisance, or they could become annoyed by it if he doesn't go out and hey, this is your mess, man. Go deal with this so they can stop asking me about it.
Well, and Herb, you pointed it out too, right? They're going to have to deal with it again when the book comes out. And the longer and the more this festers, the worse I think it ends up being for the Bears. And, you know, then that, I don't know, maybe it takes away from mentally from what he does preparing with Ben Johnson. I hope it wouldn't, but certainly he had a lot of struggles last year. We knew about some of them at the time. They obviously dismissed both their offensive coordinator and head coach during the season. Usually signs things are not going well, but it's, to me, it's still, I am perplexed by the fact that they knew they were going to take Caleb number one, and that was the setup they put him in. That just boggles my mind still to this day.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, just the first time I had a chance to meet Coach Waldron, I was like, this is the guy they chose. They interviewed 13, 14 people, and this is where they settled. And that was just very, you know, interesting to me, considering some of the other candidates that were available in the last coaching cycle for offensive coordinator. And so they didn't put him in the best situation, you know, coming out of the start. That's just the fact of the matter. And, you know, I don't know that I wouldn't say he wasted his rookie year, because he played all the games. He got to see a lot of different things, got to face a lot of different defenses, and, you know, got to build some things with his teammates. But in terms of his individual development from a coaching perspective, I don't know how much he was able to gain in that year because of all the things that were in flux and all the turnover and firing the head coach and firing the OC and having different play callers in the middle of the season. That's going to be rough on any quarterback, let alone a rookie quarterback. And so I imagine Caleb is really looking forward to just some stability on the offensive side of the football, and hopefully Coach Johnson can bring that.
Our guest is Herb Howard of the Bigs. He covers the Bears. He's on the beat for him. We're talking Bears here on The Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. One of the direct quotes that I'm so interested in is, Caleb came back and told his dad, no, I don't want to nuke the city. What do you think was involved in nuking the city? Putting ketchup on a hot dog, or just talking about the crime rate here? He doesn't want to go to such a lawless city. What is involved? What would be involved? What was the plan, do you think, that Caleb would have invoked for nuking the city to not get drafted by the Bears?
I mean, we heard all the reports that were coming out and them speaking to different lawyers and them talking to people like, you know, Archie Manning, and trying to find out the different ways they could try to manipulate some of these things that were going on in terms of trying to get to a different destination other than the team that owned the number one pick. And so, I mean, I imagine you just didn't really want those things to come out. This is not a city that you want to come and kind of like spit in our face that we don't want to come there. Like, this is not that kind of city. We won't take that well. And so I get it, trying to not have those things come out. But you're also on the record with Seth about this. Like, this is going to come out. So what are y'all doing with this situation? So,
yeah.
I just didn't get it. I mean, I know he met with the Bears and talked to Ryan Poles. And, you know, Ryan Poles either gave him the bottom line, like, we're taking you anyway, or he was able to sincerely convince him that this is a place that he can succeed. Either way, I don't know what the plan was in terms of going on the record, but also trying to keep this thing off the record. That just didn't make a ton of sense to me. But as far as the city, I think Ryan Poles or whoever just told him, like, that's just not, we're drafting you anyway. And so you don't really want to come in here with this city knowing, I don't really want to come there.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, Herb. And switching gears from Caleb for a second, talking about the line, I am very excited as you could be about offensive line, but that they got that middle solidified. They just extended Tooney. Dalman Jackson, you know, they're there for 3 years. You know, injury hopefully will stay away, but that solidifies that blocking for Caleb. But I want to ask you about the tackle spots, because here's where it gets interesting. Ozzie Trapillo is a second-round pick. You have an injured Braxton Jones. You have Darnell Wright, who they have hinted they could move if they wanted. You have Amagaji still there. How do you think this plays out with left tackle and right tackle?
Yeah, I think it's largely going to depend on how long Braxton is out, how deep into camp before he can actually get out on the field, get into pads, and start to move around. I mean, the longer that goes, the more you open up the possibility for all these other different scenarios. Is Ozzie Trapillo developing at a rate where they think he can come in and be a week one starter? And if so, where? Is he doing a good enough job at left tackle to be able to do it? Or does he need to go to the right tackle's position, which seems like a more natural fit to him, and then you have to move Darnell Wright over? They said they want to get this thing settled as quickly as possible, which isn't necessarily a good thing for Braxton Jones. And everybody's kind of assuming it's going to be somebody other than Braxton Jones, but he's the guy that's been the starting left tackle for the Bears at a serviceable rate for 3 years. And so I don't know where this idea that Ozzie Trapillo, who was really probably the last draftable tackle in that block of tackles, the Bears like had to get the last one because there was a run on them, and now everybody's like, Ozzie Trapillo is going to be the guy. And it's like, maybe, but where's that coming from? Most people didn't know his name until they called it at the draft, and like, it's not like you went out and got Will Campbell where everybody said, okay, you can plug and play him right now. So I think there's a little bit of a optimistic view about, you know, what Ozzie Trapillo can do, and I like his game. He's huge. I think he's very consistent, great technique, all those things. But you're still talking about a rookie. I think we'll learn a lot about him when we get to training camp. We see him get some individual pass rushes versus, you know, Montez Sweat or Dangbo or some of those veterans, just to see, can this kid really play at that level right now, or is it going to be a little bit more of a developmental process? And so I think you start to answer some of those questions, and then nobody's ever seen Amagaji, really, right? He didn't get a chance to do this in terms of, you know, OTAs and mini camp and training camp last year. We saw him get thrown to the wolves against Minnesota, some slight improvement when he had to play against Washington, but we don't really know what the Bears have there either, and quite frankly, I would assume neither do they. And so they'll watch that competition early on in camp, and then when Braxton Jones comes back, we'll see if either of them is actually ahead of the fourth year veteran, you know, coming into, you know, preseason as we get closer to that Monday night game against Minnesota.
Our guest is Herb Howard. He covers the Bears for the Bigs. You can find his work there. We're talking Bears here on The Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. You wrote about, so let's talk about your first impression of Ben Johnson running a practice, whatever level, compared to the buttercream frosting that was Matt Eberflus. So what did you think about what you saw and heard and how it was run?
Yeah, see, I think it was refreshing is what I would say. Just to see, you know, a head coach on the field with a lot of energy, but also holding guys accountable. It's very, very early in the process. There are going to be tons of mistakes and lots of things to yell at if you want to. And he seems to want to. He seems to want to kind of expedite the process of getting this thing right. And I like the approach. The one particular thing that stood out to me that I wrote about in the piece was, you know, Cole Kmet being the guy that he most, at least from what I saw, he caught it like the worst in terms of when Coach was the loudest and when he seemed the most perturbed about something that happened. And Cole Kmet either lined up in the wrong spot or he lined up too slow and Ben Johnson just wasn't for it. And he got on Cole Kmet immediately, made the guys get back in the huddle and do it again. And I think, you know, we've heard, you know, coaches and the previous regime talk about, you know, we're not going to walk past any mistakes. And then they walk past a ton of mistakes. And you hear it later, like, oh, we should have addressed this. We should have addressed that. Well, why didn't you? And I think Coach Johnson's at least trying to get out to a start where it says, no, we literally are not going to walk past these mistakes. We're going to recognize them. We're going to call them out. And we're going to rectify them in the moment. And I think that's a really, really good standard to set, at least in the beginning. Now, if he can always, you know, pull back a little bit once he starts to understand all of his players and who's motivated by what tactics. But I think it's hard to go the other way. It's hard to be soft on them and then kind of flip the switch and be hard on them. You can always pull back if you see they can handle it or you see they're, you know, developing at the rate you want them to. But I think it's a really good thing that he's come out and all the players were supporting it. Grady Jarrett comes out to his press conference after coach and he's like, listen, man, that's the standard that he's setting across the board for offense and defense. And he thinks it's a really, really healthy situation for the players to be into, that they have to rise and meet the standard because, as Grady Jarrett said, the coaches are not going to come off of it and the players just have to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, Herb, I was not expecting the red ass from Ben Johnson. I mean, you knew that he was going to come in and schematically be there. He's one of the best offensive minds and has had a great offense for, you know, how many years running in Detroit. But I was not expecting that. And I'm glad, I'm pleasantly surprised, I will say, by that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, there were questions during the coaching cycle. Everybody knew he was going to be one of, if not the top candidate. And what we knew about him was that he was an offensive genius and he can, you know, call plays at a really, really high level. But is he a guy that can command the locker room? Can he lead 53 men? And people didn't know that because he'd never done it before. And was he just this, you know, this genius and he's got this computer science background and all those types of things? Can he do this? And I think from the moment that I had a chance to meet him at his introductory press conference and we did some breakout sessions and some more intimate conversations, I was like, no, this guy has the confidence, the charisma to be able to command a room and command the respect of 53 men in the locker room. And then I think having the chance to see it for the first time with his whole team out on the grass with the veterans there, he showed himself to be who I thought he would be and just capable of, you know, leading this team in the way that they need to be led. And I think as long as you do that across the board, if you're going to go at a veteran guy like Cole Kmet, then what are some of these rookies going to do? They got to rise and they got to meet the standard on a daily basis. And as long as he stays consistent and he has great coaches around him that are going to do the same thing, Eric Bieniemy, to quote Grady Jarrett again, he's not going to come off it either, right? You look at Al Harris and you see how he's moving around the field and coaching up these DBs, and the same thing with Antoine Randall with the receivers. He's got coaches that are also going to do the same thing he's doing. So this is across the board now with the head coach and throughout the staff, and the players are going to have to get used to it whether they like it or not. If they're going to be on the field, they're going to have to do it his way.
Yes, his way. That's what we do.
That's
here.
That's what we want.
I'm the coach. We're doing it my way and right. Like that. Herb, always love talking to you. Great information. We appreciate your time and have yourself a restful holiday. How about that?
Indeed. Steve, Mike, appreciate y'all so much, man. Thanks for having me.
All Thank you, Herb.
That is Herb Howard from the Bigs talking Bears. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, a variety of things to do. We had Boomer Esiason talking about Caleb. We also had great response to this trade idea. Would you trade Paul Skeens for PCA? Would you, Cubs fans? 312-644-6767, text line and phone lines. And hockey players, they're just like us. They're just like you.
Like me?
Youth coach, you.
Okay.
They are. We got that. So, a bunch of stuff to do. Steve Rosenblum, Mike Esposito, in for Mullion Haw. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Still gets me.
Today in 1977, that movie came out. Those words crawled across the screen.
Man.
And that music grew into legend. John Williams.
48 years old. That makes me feel old.
Star Wars showed up on a couple screens and then showed up on every screen and hasn't stopped. It's really today in 1977. That was it. And this music and John Williams composed whatever Steven Spielberg wanted to do, whatever George Lucas wanted to do. And I don't know if it was Indiana Jones, because he did.
Yep.
John Williams did Jaws and did all of this. There was some movie, and I don't know the name of the movie, where he told Steven Spielberg, you need a better composer than me. And Steven Spielberg said, you're right, but they're all dead.
Shit. Was it Schindler's List, maybe?
I don't know what it was, but it was. That's it. I thought we'd bring that back. Star Wars.
I will say this.
Beautiful Star Wars.
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
I will say this. When the original came out, I remember, and this is how big the original, for our younger listeners, this is how big the original Star Wars was. When it was out in the movies and you couldn't watch it at home and you had to go to the movies in 1977, I remember going with my entire family, including my grandmother Esposito, who I never went to another movie with ever.
Nani Esposito?
No, Nani was the other. Nani was Carcello. She was the other one. Grandma was Esposito. Grandma Esposito, that was the one and only movie that I ever attended with my grandma Esposito, and it was Star Wars.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah. So we enjoyed it, though.
By the way, did you see the Nonas? Have you seen that on Netflix?
I have heard of it, but I have not seen it.
Oh, my God. You will laugh. You will cry. You will. It's one of the best movie hugs you've ever had.
I was told I need to watch it, yes.
The Nonas. It's spectacular. And the casting is excellent. The writing's wonderful. It's a true story. It is a true story.
Now I have to watch
that
it.
That restaurant is still there. And by the way, as long as you're going around there, if you got an extra half hour, there is a documentary out there that is stunning, a stunning presentation of the American spirit, even behind bars. It's called The Quilters.
The Quilters.
The Quilters. It's about people in men in a maximum security prison who make quilts for kids who need, whether it's heavy blankets or kids who are alone or kids on the spectrum. It's a wonderful documentary.
Okay.
Okay, that's it. We proposed a trade. Well, I did. I threw it out there. So what do you think? Would you trade? And I'm saying this because everybody wants to attack me now. PCA for Paul Skeens. Talked about Paul Skeens. Well, they got to trade him because they're never going to pay him. And the Pirates suck. And when it comes to ownership, would you trade PCA, budding MVP, MVP candidate right there, Paul Skeens, Cy Young candidate? And we've gotten everything from hell no.
We have a lot of capital letters texts coming in. Yes, we do.
And we got one idea. 312 texter said, well, if you guarantee me that you're going to sign Kyle Tucker, yeah, I'd make that deal. And a lot of them look like this. I never liked the idea. 262 texter, I never liked the idea of trading an everyday player for a pitcher. One-dimensional impact of a pitcher for every 5 days for a player who plays every day and can affect 162 games.
Yeah, no, and we got a bunch of texts, and I've been the compiler here because that's
the
what
compiler.
I do here.
Is that your... That's like a D-level superhero.
Compiler! That's right. I'm here with my pen and my notepad. I literally have my trusty yellow pad here that I can write on. 815 says, PCA sells tickets and is a dynamic player. I'm guessing Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn would sell tickets as well. 574, PCA plays on emotion. How would that work in Pittsburgh where they have no fans? Good call. 937 says PCA is a disruptor. That's another superhero, the disruptor.
The disruptor.
And the 608 has no faith, he says. Ricketts will never pay PCA, Tucker, or Skeens. So he just dismisses the whole thing. None of them will be here, he says.
Well, he didn't want to pay Yu Darvish. They didn't want to pay off the end of that contract. Yu Darvish was...
Which has turned out to be correct.
No, it's not.
In the long term.
No, it's not. He was really good in San Diego.
Well, for like a year.
2 years. Look at it.
All right, I'm going to look at it right now.
Look at his Chicago numbers versus the San Diego numbers. Meanwhile, I'm going to look at Dave from Slinger, Wisconsin. Is that you calling from Wisconsin, Dave?
Yeah, man. Happy Memorial Day to you all. And no,
wait, Dave. Nothing happy about Memorial Day because people died to get us. So we're saying have a respectful and restful Memorial Day, all right, in your observance of it, okay?
Have a restful Memorial Day.
All right, there we go.
Okay, anyway, I just wanted to tell you that, no, I want to keep Armstrong player on our team. I want Paul Skeens, well, he's a good pitcher, admit it, but I'd rather keep, the way he's helping the Cubs, I'd rather we keep him.
All right, noted. I appreciate you calling in this Armstrong player. His name is Shohei Crow Armstrong. So that way you know who
will be
he
pitching
is.
Again soon.
Tommy, Shohei. From where are you, Tommy? I can't see it on here. Tommy, where are you calling from?
Well, I was in Lake Bluff when I got on, but now I'm in Highland Park. So we're moving.
Such a long, we love it.
Such a long drive. How have you managed? Did you have to spend the night somewhere?
I'm working my way to downtown Chicago to the Loop to have some brunch in the Loop, and so I'm glad to be on. By the way, guys, I'm really enjoying you guys together, and if I'm not mistaken, and I love both of your guys, you know, Steve, you're right, I've been here for 40 years and love your writing over all the decades, but if I'm not mistaken, isn't Rosenblum and Esposito a fine law firm on South Street? Sounds like a good law firm.
Yes.
Rosenblum and Esposito.
Who do we represent?
Personal injury.
Immigration law.
We're personal.
Does the law. Yeah. Immigration law, I'm pretty sure.
Will leave no ambulance left unchased.
I start law school in the fall.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, on a serious note, and I do have an asterisk after I say this, I'm the contrarian here. So I grew up in Philly, huge Phillies fan, but I married a Chicagoan and I've been here. I love both the Cubs and the Sox, but Philly's loyal. And we've been through this as the Phillies. We've had big bats ever since we've signed Bryce Harper, and we can still slug them. But what happens when you get in the playoffs, guys, and you have to get in? You need starting pitching. And if you have really good starting pitching, you know, these guys are saying it's a five-day thing. You know, you use your best starters on day four, right? And so rotation starters is what wins. And the Phillies realized that when they, you know, back when they had Cole Hamels and four other great pitchers, they won a World Series. Guess what? Since then they haven't, because we only got a 1A and a 1B and maybe a 1C starter, even though we slug as many runs as the Cubs. So I'm going to be the contrarian here, agree with, I think, Steve's disposition, which is right now, yeah, it's fun with putting up. By the way, you only have to win by run. 20-2 doesn't matter to try to win a wild card.
You can't save them for later.
you don't bank them, right? Isn't it like bocce? Isn't it bocce where you bank them? So, but I have some inside information. I went to NBA school with Tom Ricketts. He's a, you know, sort of a buddy, and I was at a small group, 20-person Q&A, and this is really interesting, because somebody asked him the state of baseball, the state of the Cubs, and, you know, we're having fun this year. And someone said, why is it that baseball doesn't get the numbers it used to compared to basketball and everything else? And he said, we don't do a good job, owners, whatever, at having a lot of big, big names. Now, we have a couple, Shohei and other. And it occurred to me, and we were talking about this fun kid that wears Mariah Carey T-shirts in the locker room, and he's like the best thing to happen to this team to create excitement. So on the one hand, I agree that we should go after the pitcher. The other hand is this kid is creating what Tom said, which is we haven't had a big personality. Dansby is not a personality. He's just a beauty. He's like a GQ. The ladies like his jersey. This kid is fun, bubbly. He's got the energy of Pete Rose. He's got the bat of Lenny Dykstra and, you know, and all that. So I'm catching myself and saying if we do want to get another World Series, you got to have a strong, you know, 1-5 in a bullpen. The flip side is this kid's fun and entertaining.
He is indeed. Well done, Tommy. We appreciate the call.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you very much. That was well said. And in the playoffs, you don't need 1 through 5. Look, the Dodgers always have
1, 2, 3.
Dodgers. They start out every season. They go to spring training. Oh, my God. The Dodgers, they got 12 players for 5 spots. How are they ever going to do this? They finally get to the season, and they've got 8 pitchers for 5 spots. How are they going to do this?
They keep getting hurt.
They get to the World Series, and they're running a bullpen game.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Walker Buehler, get out there.
But
go help
Jack
us.
Jack Flaherty.
I know.
So I still believe in pitching. I threw the question out to see where people. First of all, it's too early for a trade like this. Although the Cubs in '84 made the Rick Seca trade, as it was brought up, that
309
traded a position player for that guy, and Rick Sutcliffe came in and seemed to work out pretty well. 16 wins later,
that was from memory. Joe Carter and Mel Hall for Rick Sutcliffe, something like that, right?
Yep. Yep.
Or Joe Carter, and if Joe Carter was
the position players,
it was Joe Carter was the main dude
and
in
Mel
that.
Mel Hall. Yeah. And Rick Sutcliffe came in, and I just, again, a different era of baseball, and Pete Crow Armstrong is so much fun. There's no question. Speed always does that. You know, when Theo was talking about when he was heading this committee, let's make baseball more interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's make it more fun. And you're talking, what was the most fun you can have in baseball, which was a triple? That's the most exciting play in baseball. One of the most exciting in sports. Nobody did that anymore because it was home runs or strikeouts or walks. 3 true outcomes.
I can tell you firsthand, as a 13U baseball coach, the kids, for what it's worth, from Tommy's point to his point about star power and people getting interested and
star
eyeballs.
Star power.
We're going to get that in a second. The kids love PCA. The kids may like Kyle Tucker just fine when he hits a home run or whatever, but Kyle Tucker is boring. Kyle Tucker is not going to be, he may be the best player on your team, but he's not, you know, face of the franchise, like super exciting type PCA now is that guy. I can tell you the kids these days, they love them some PCA.
Kids these days.
The dads, you know, like him too, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree. He is exciting because he does so many things. The speed shows up in so many different areas. The stolen bases, turning singles into triples, and running down, turning triples into outs, running down fly balls, things like that. And all of a sudden, he's ringing balls off the foul pole. And he's doing all this stuff that has him right behind, not right behind, everybody's way behind Aaron Judge in F4 on Fangraphs. But he's second in F4 behind Aaron Judge. That's, this guy's an MVP candidate, and he does wonderful things. However, for all you people, keep PCA. You can't trade PCA. Brock Fabrolio, you can't do that. And when's Skeens' UCL going to go out? And where is he going to need surgery? And I saw so many comments like this. I didn't think Chairman Reinsdorf was texting the score so often. What about the injury factor? What about it? You always pay too much for a bet, right? And why then, as you Cub fans argue against trading PCA for this Cy Young candidate who's young and dynamic and scares the crap out of everybody in baseball with and without decimal points, then why is pitching so important?
No, you're not wrong. It's a fascinating, fascinating question because he's literally had, when you think about it, he's had 2 months, right? And even at the start of this season, he started cold for, you know, the first 3 weeks or whatever. And then ever since then, it's been like, the light bulb flipped, and it was, and I know what you're laughing at, because
yes,
I laughed at the same thing.
It's our beloved 815
texters,
where the Wake and Bake Club lives. It's one of the strong outposts, and I would swear it'd be Grody. We have to ask Grody if that. So we'll share with you the text, 815 texter. I renamed my cat Pete Cat Armstrong.
Oh, man. No, that is for absolute sure the text of the show right now. And as we trail out this segment, Tyler, I know you prepared something for Steve directly. So to kind of tie together where we started the segment versus where we will end the segment as we get ready. And we could tease the next segment as we're listening to this. But I thought you wanted to...
We'll do this, and so you bring the U13 and all that. That it turns out hockey players, they're just like you and me and all the kids. And here's the special performance that we had in the way going out of the segment the way we came in.
Okay, last one for you, Brad. A few days.
What am I playing? I suck. What am I playing? The Star.
You're playing. Forget it. You're playing a commercial. Just like, go to breaks. Chicago Sports Radio is 670 The Score. It's Monday Suckage with Tyler Farengold.
Steve Rosenblum. Mike Esposito on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hey, I know those guys. I'm one of them. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mike Esposito. Welcome back. Welcome in. A respectful and restful and Memorial Day filled with gratitude for people who gave their lives so we can enjoy the freedom of proposing a Paul Skeens for a PCA trade. We'll run that by Bruce Levine at the top of the hour. We'll see how he likes that, or doesn't, what he has to say about it. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by a local Hyundai dealer. So a couple things I want to bring small hockey segment here. The Blackhawks will introduce Jeff Blashill tomorrow, if that's still scheduled, their new coach. And he's getting a second chance. He sucked with the Wings because the Wings sucked. But he has a track record of developing, some young players developed under him, most notably Dylan Larkin. And there were some others, Mo Sider's Calder year was a quality year. So some guys can develop, but he's getting a second chance. And I got a question, because he inspires zero excitement. This hire,
no,
this hire is an absolute flop in terms of entertainment. If he can coach, that's good. And you're giving a guy a second chance. Yeah, we think he came from John Cooper. He's not John Cooper. He came from John Cooper. That's great. You want to bring me John Cooper? This is an A-plus hire. And I saw Scott Powers was writing The Athletic. Bill Zito was quoted, the Panthers GM was quoted as saying, this is a 10-plus. You know what?
Not Esposito, but Bill Zito.
If you're giving a guy a second chance, why wouldn't you give Eddie Olczyk a second chance?
Yeah.
Of course, he should be the GM, because guess what? I don't trust this hire because the GM who should have been fired is making this hire. And it's not that Kyle Davidson, he can seem to spot talent. Frankie Nazar.
Mm-hmm. He just mentioned him, yeah.
He just led the United States to their first world gold medal in 92 years. And he tied for the team lead in goals and tied for the team lead in points. And there are young players coming along. Kyle Davidson cannot seem to generally manage the right way. And Eddie Olczyk, a Chicagoan, beloved, if you want to move the needle somehow, he would have been the guy. He was a guy who was fired, thrown out on his ass by Mario Lemieux for the wrong reasons. And there was a team that would grow into win a Stanley Cup. And I have every reason to believe Eddie could have done that as coach, wasn't given the chance. Sidney Crosby missed most of the year. And you have Connor Bedard, and the best you can do is Jeff Blashill?
It's definitely a, what's the opposite of an awe-inspiring hire, right?
It's not.
It's kind of a...
It inspires nothing.
I heard our old pal Jay Zawoski on these airwaves talking to Spiegel and Holmes the other afternoon, talking about this very hire, and he was trying to talk it up, right? I mean, and he was... But however you look at it, right? It doesn't move the needle. Most people, He could do man on the street interviews and you could walk right up to Jeff Blashill and you'd not know. 99 out of 100 people would have no idea who he was.
Well, that's why Kyle from Chicago became famous.
Exactly.
Man on the street interview. And I'm Kyle from Chicago, right? The guy didn't even know he was a GM. All right. But that said, all right, that's done. Eddie O should have gotten one of these jobs and he didn't. And that short-sightedness by an organization that has trouble. However, hockey players are just like you and me, and you especially,
Mr. Okay.
Coach of the under U13 teams, and I went
13
through this.
You and me,
whatever
buddy.
You are. So Brad Marchand, a man everyone loves to hate, and all he does is win. He's with the Panthers, yep. And they keep winning. And the Carolina Hurricanes have lost an unbelievable 15 straight conference championship games. They're going to lose their 16th straight, and the Panthers, the defending champs, are going back to defend the Stanley Cup championship. Brad Marchand scored. And Brad Marchand is a guy who you always hear these stories about hockey players. Oh, we're going to a bar. We're going to do this. We're going to, no. Brad Marchand's got a different idea. He's just like you and me because we love going to Dairy Queen.
Okay, last one for you, Brad. A few days ago, an image surfaced of you and some teammates going for a Dairy Queen run on an off day in Raleigh. We got an image of you in the dressing room during the second intermission. No chance you were fueling with a blizzard here, were you?
Yeah, that's a little chocolate chip cookie dough blizzard right there. There's nothing, you can't beat it. It's the best dessert in the world. So I better get a lifetime free supply of Dairy Queen now. Thank you, fellas. But yeah, we had a little fun on the off day, and there's DQ right by the hotel, so we popped over, got a blizzard, enjoyed our night.
Just like you and me, Brad Marchand, Stanley Cup champion, he's going to DQ.
And he should get free DQ for that. And I could tell you that the Esposito family wholeheartedly agrees with him on that. That is one of the only food groups that all five of us agree on is Dairy Queen.
There you go. That's where you go. All right, take a break. When we come back, we will talk to Bruce Levine about the Cubs' incredible lineup that seems to run about 13 players deep, and we'll talk about the Sox, who have a first baseman who doesn't know where first base is. So we'll do that next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.